WTLC AM Indianapolis. Indy's choice for inspiration and praise. AM 1310, The Light.
I am not moonwalking down here, and neither is Congressman Andre Carson. He's the final candidate in our 2014 election. The congressman is here. He is running in the 7th Congressional District, which is most of Marion County, all of Center, Wayne, Warren Townships, Decatur, Franklin, Perry Townships, as well as a good portion of Pike, Washington, and Lawrence Townships. So now, after all that, why are you running?
Well, Dr. Brown, you know, I've had the honor of representing the 7th Congressional District for 6.5 years. Since I've been in office, we've been able to bring back over $500 million to Indianapolis, to Indiana, to the 7th Congressional District. We've had two pieces of legislation signed into law by President Obama. We've helped create jobs. We've helped save hundreds of jobs at the Beech Grove Amtrak facility. We've empowered a lot of small businesses. We have brought them into the federal space now, and they're doing a lot of work with the federal government. We've helped create jobs. We've helped spur a series of capital infusions into Indianapolis to spur economic growth and activity. And there's more work to be done, and we hope to get reelected to continue representing and bringing quality public service.
Why then, though, Congressman, do people think that our community is worse off today than it was 5, 6, 7 years ago, and that they feel that there's been no progress?
Well, that's a great question. You know, if you will recall 5, 6, 7 years ago, when George Bush was in office, people had the same sentiment. Under George Bush, there was this sense of disillusionment, mm-hmm. governmental distrust. People were dispassionate. People were indifferent. And I think the tone of cynicism seems to be recurring, especially during the midterm elections, mm-hmm. When the economy was tanking around 07. Right. That was a common sentiment. Folks were against elected officials. We had just come up over the Democratic takeover in 2008 in the House of Representatives. And after that, we saw the 2010 vote the bums out movement, vote the bums out, get them out of Congress. Well, the American people voted the bums out, and they brought in lunatics. And the difficulty is that when you live in a democracy, folks will criticize you, and I understand that criticism. And in a democracy, we should be free to criticize people. But I think we also have to be aware about paid provocateurs who call into shows like Amos Brown, and they want to accuse people. Someone said, I reminded him of the politician on Good Times. If I'm anybody from Good Times, it's Michael, the little brother. But I digress, that's for sure. And so I think you have these Negroes who want to stir the pot, who want to be critical. But if you follow the money, they're just extensions of a Tea Party effort to discredit folks who are doing a good job. And we've seen it with Julia Carson. We saw the slander that she went through. It's funny how people have angelicized Julia Carson. But the last few years, they demonized her, especially Negro leadership.
The other thing is, and correct me if I'm wrong, the Republican majority in Congress prohibits a member of Congress from saying, I've got a project in Brightwood,
yeah,
and I'd like $500,000 to be earmarked for this project in Brightwood.
Sure.
Y'all can't do that no more.
You know, that's the difficulty.
Isn't that what people are asking? Well, how come he didn't do anything in Brightwood?
Well, we've done a lot for Brightwood. I think the difficulty happens, as another caller mentioned, that statement that I made. Once it becomes locally, it's out of our hands in a sense, especially if you don't have an administration that is as friendly as we would under a Democratic administration. So you'll see mayors and other folks cutting ribbons off of money that we fought hard to bring to the district. And that's,
you're bringing money to the district. It's the mayor's responsibility to have the people hire. But do you have any responsibility going back to check and say, wait a minute, how come I brought you all this money and it's people from Greenwood that got the gig?
Oh, sure. Absolutely. But when you have an administration that isn't as friendly as it could be or should be, mm-hmm. it makes that process much more difficult. That's not to say that we haven't worked with the mayor's office, and we do from time to time, but I think if it were a Democratic administration, you would see us more, and you would see the credit that we deserve by God's permission.
If you is it your responsibility as a member of Congress? Is it other members of Congress' responsibility, particularly in the Congressional Black Caucus, to go in their individual communities and be the leader of that black community?
Well, I think, you know, I used to have this debate with my my good friend from Chicago, a fellow colleague, and I think that there, yes, we are leaders, but I think that there is a danger in placing all of one's hopes, dreams, aspirations on one particular person. That is not what a democracy is about. We have faith leaders who share that responsibility. We have locally elected officials, council members, state reps, mayors, governors, and other folks who share that responsibility. We have leaders of local NGOs and non-for-profits who share that responsibility. To place all of your hopes and aspirations on one person, I think you're setting yourself up for disappointment and disillusionment. Am I in a leadership capacity that I proudly recognize and carry the mantle? Absolutely. But I think when we're pointing the finger at what are the preachers doing? What are the imams doing? What are the rabbis doing? What is the council doing? What is the state rep doing? Then I think we absolve ourselves from personal responsibility for being engaged in the political process.
If you had to rank five things you've done for this black community, you heard the question from Don, what would you break it down as?
Well, I think it's clear for me that if some of my friends in the business community who tend to be apolitical would at least speak up more boldly, they would talk about the numerous African-American businesses that we've helped bring into the federal space to not only create more jobs, but hopefully create more black millionaires in a real sense, who are thus in turn creating jobs. If we talk about the levels of money and advocacy that we brought toward bringing resources back to the district to help local non-for-profits, to help community centers. We can also talk about, in tangible forms, the amount of money that we've brought in a law enforcement capacity. We've seen spurts of crime increase in our community, but we've seen a decrease as well over the past few months. We'd like to think that we play at least a small role, if not a significant role in that, in helping to secure resources for police cruisers and increasing emergency response times. We've also done a lot in terms of putting more African Americans in the political space, producing the next Bill Crawfords, helping to produce the next Maggie Lewis's, the Andre Carsons, the Julia Carsons, and so on and so forth, the Joe Summers. We send tons of African Americans to political boot camps every year. We develop new talent. We hire new talent. We develop that talent. We send them out. Some of them go on to Ivy League institutions. Some of them become campaign managers. Some of them have held local office. Maggie Lewis is a genius in her own right. She's blessed. She has a lot of support. She has a lot of people co-signed on to her. But I'd like to take a microcosm of some credit, just a microcosm, from my dear sister, from another mother, because I love her dearly. Maggie was one of the folks that we sent to the Congressional Black Caucus boot camp years ago, before she became the giant that she is. And I never want to take credit for that, but a small piece of credit in terms of the honing and development that we try to do within our organization.
All right, everybody's brother wants to talk to the congressman. We're going to try to see if we can set a new world's record.
I was going to do seven more things, brother, but go ahead.
Keep your question short and to the point. Let me go to Kenneth. Hi, Kenneth.
Hi. I'd just like to make a comment on something that one of the gentlemen said earlier about Andre Carson. You know, I know Julie Carson and Andre. I know both of them personally. To me, it sounds like that we're not even, you know, worried about politics or Democrats or anything like that. To me, it sounded like he was wanting to bring up, you know, all about race and things like that. You know, there are jobs out here, but they're not going to come to you. You know, just like I tell my brother, you know. You know, you have to get out here and you have to look for the jobs. All they can do is just post ads and stuff like that. And like the lady said earlier, you know, Amazon's hiring, FedEx is hiring. Mm-hmm. You just have to get out here and, you know, show that you want a job instead of sitting at home saying, you know, I need to work, I need to work. you know, go out and look for the jobs. You know.
All right, let me move on. Let me move on to Jerome with Congressman Carson. Hi, Jerome.
Hi, and it's, I'm here in Terre Haute at Indiana State, picking up one of the students that I've worked with over the years. Mm-hmm. As a matter of fact, she was the number 100 out of the 100 that I put through high school. Mm-hmm. And Andre, you've earned my vote again.
Thank you.
Because of what you have done in the community and the things that you do bring back. For the callers that called in and helped you out a little bit, all I can say is, as a 58-year-old white male that's worked in Brightwood in the last 25 to 30 years with all these kids that I've worked with, your office has always been open to any questions I've ever called in for. You show up at community events. And you don't just show up to give a little, you know, political, hey, I'm here.
Thank you.
You engage. And that's what it takes. That's what a congressman's supposed to do. You're supposed to come back to our district, engage us, let us know what's going on. And when we call your office and have concerns, your staff is supposed to be qualified to answer those concerns for us, which your staff has been very good with me over the years. So just from my personal experience, I've been very happy with that.
Well, thank you, sir. Thank you, sir. I appreciate that. I also want to say to that point, and that means a lot, and Godspeed to you and Terre Haute as this weather's changing. Dr. Brown, for the past 5 years, we've hosted a job fair mm-hmm. at Ivy Tech or IUPUI. Scores of people have been hired on the spot. This year, we had a separate job opportunity. We had a youth career fair. Not only did we have employers hiring, but we had employers offering internships
right.
for young people mm-hmm. and opportunities to advance themselves and ultimately go to college. So in terms of the things that we've done for the African-American community, it's more than five. It's probably like 15 or 20, but just to name a few, we wanted to highlight it.
All right, to Ted at 239-1310. Hi, Ted. Ted?
Hello?
You're on the air. You got to keep moving.
Okay, hi, Mr. Carson. I have a son that's at IU getting ready to graduate, and I was just wondering what you can do to help get down the cost of of college education.
Uh-oh. Hey.
Well, thank you. I'm an original co-sponsor of a student loan bill that has successfully lowered interest rates on student loans. And I think that's our attempt to help remedy the situation. I still think that the administration, and regardless of whether you agree or not with Secretary Duncan, has done a lot at reeling in some universities that have not been as successful in terms of their outputs, in terms of career placement. But I'm an original co-sponsor of student loan legislation that has helped to lower interest rates on student loans.
Should the next Congress start looking at ways of providing either tax credits or tax breaks for parents who are shouldering the bill so that maybe they get a break on the income tax rate or they get a break of something to try to help that financial burden?
I would love for us to even go further, Amos. There are a lot of European countries. Germany just released an announcement that they're offering free education at some of their universities. I think that education personally should be free, but I'm pretty progressive as it relates to education. I think that those are the kinds of steps that we should look at. I think folks that have served our country honorably or who have done work in the public service sector should get a break when their kids want to go to school. But you know, in 2013, I voted to pass the bipartisan compromise to really connect the Stafford loans to the 10-year Treasury note and effectively cap interest rates so that they are never above 8.2% for student borrowers. So I've done things to support efforts to maintain the current maximum Pell Grant Award while working to improve financial aid programs. But I think we still have a lot to do. I introduced the Higher Education Employment Transparency Act not too long ago, which effectively provides incoming students with information about how various schools and majors relate to employment after graduation.
Are you encouraged by the actions of the Department of Education to start cracking down on the for-profit schools, the proprietary schools, because they educate a disproportionate number of African-Americans who get the certificate or degree, and then it ain't worth the paper it's printed on, and then they're more in debt than several European countries?
I am. I think that what the President and Secretary Duncan have attempted to do is commendable. There are numerous degree mills out there, diploma mills out there. However, there are some for-profit entities that I think are pretty innovative and are outpacing some traditional universities in terms of their pedagogy and andragogy, or that is student teaching and adult learning. But at the same time, I think that there are too many who tend to literally be for-profit, and you don't see the same kinds of outputs, and you have folks with hundreds of thousands of dollars in debt, and the degree that they have isn't worth the piece of paper it's printed on.
Let me go to David right quick, then we'll take a break at 239-1310. Hi there. David?
Oh, yes. I'm sorry. Been on the line. Mr. Carson, just a couple questions. One is, what is the House of Representatives going to do if there's a possible change in the Senate? And second part of that question, what new or interesting legislation do you have on your agenda for the upcoming years?
Great.
Thank you.
Two great questions.
If we lose the Senate, the House clearly is not going to change, unfortunately. I think the kind of obstructionism that we've seen over the past few weeks, we're dealing literally with an Ebola crisis. And members of Congress have been pledged to this kind of obstructionism that has never been seen in the history of this country. If we lose the Senate, I'm fearful that the kind of vitriol that we've seen, the kind of animosity toward the president, the kind of obstructionism that I just spoke of, will not only expand, but it will deepen. And for those folks who want to criticize elected officials and those people who say they don't want to participate in the political process, you will realize how much your vote counts if we were to lose the Senate. What I intend to do next session, God willing we win, is to reintroduce my Recidivism Reduction Act that effectively allows folks who are released from incarceration, if they have received benefits, those benefits kick in immediately so they don't recidivate into a life of crime. I hope to reintroduce my financial literacy bill that pairs NGOs and not-for-profits up with the banking community and financial services community to fill in the gaps where our schools have failed. And that is to teach financial literacy to our communities. It's not to make folks Wall Street hedge fund managers, but it is to allow folks to have a comprehensive and working knowledge of how financial decisions impact their daily lives.
239-1310. 239-1310 is afternoon's name. He's Congressman Andre Carson. He's running for re-election in the 7th Congressional District in the election that is on Tuesday. You can vote today till 5. Vote tomorrow. City County Building from 10 until 5. You can vote on Monday from 8 until noon, and everything else is on Tuesday. Need to know where to vote? 327-VOTE, 327-VOTE, or go online to indianavoters.com. You type in your address, they tell you where your polling place is, who's on the ballot, and all that kind of good stuff. It's Afternoons with Amos on a Friday.
Hello, this is Pastor Michael K. Jones, and you're listening to Afternoons with Amos on AM 1310, The Light.
Back to the phones, and Pastor Brad at 239-1310. Hi there.
How you doing, Amos?
Fine, sir.
Good. Mr. Carson, how you doing today, sir?
How you doing, Pastor?
Good. I have a question for you. On a federal level, can you propose a bill or a rule to hire felons? Because I know on a state level, for small businesses, they place the rule to delete the box, which doesn't help during the interview process if they ask the question. So if you can affect this change, does that bonding bill also work on this on a federal level? Could you perhaps do something about that?
That was a great question.
That was a great question. You know, Congressman Danny Davis, who has introduced legislation every legislative session for the past 6 or 7, I've been an original co-sponsor on his legislation. It's on his website. Look it up. And I plan to, God willing, get reelected sign on to his legislation. Again, he provides a federal remedy or a federal standard to deal with just what you asked.
All right, great question. Appreciate it. I got an email at praiseindy.com. Ray says, Kelly School of Business says there's been only 22,000 jobs created in the metro area. Kelly School of Business says the area needs 48,000 jobs to break even. Why does the congressman think the jobs differ from what's being pushed and how it relates to the perception that there are many jobs? There is this disconnect. I mean, we have the on paper, we have the lowest unemployment rate in this area since the recession started. Yet the feeling of many are people aren't working at the rate they were before the Great Recession, or if they are, it's at reduced wages.
Well, some economists have asserted that we haven't been working as well as we should have been since the Clinton administration. I will say that the unemployment numbers came out, and you've seen them, Amos, like 3 weeks ago, and for the first time since July of 2008, we've been under 6%. We were at 5.9. I think in Indianapolis we're at 5.7 or 5.8. There are jobs out there, as is evidenced by when we have our job fairs. There are, we had over, how many employees? We had over 75 employers show up, and hundreds of job openings were available. So it told me very specifically, very concisely, very clearly that there are jobs out there. The question becomes, how do we connect the employers with the potential employees? And our annual job fair has been a facilitator in doing such, and as was our youth opportunities fair in May, which we held, which was quite successful. We had a lot of teenagers and young adults show up. We had them connected to the symphony. We had them connected to potential employers, and it's something that we want to do, but I think we have to have facilitators who could kind of manage expectations, but also bring the potential brilliance to an organization.
239-1310. 239-1310. This afternoon's name is going to go to Elder Rush right quick. Hi, Elder.
Hey, Amos. Hi, Congressman.
Hey, hi, beloved.
I just want to say this real quickly. I have spoken to power for the past 30-plus years, and often those statements of necessity are very critical. That's why it's more important that I say how proud I am of Congressman Andre Carson. He's smart, he's prepared, he's articulate, he's measured, he's pensive, he's competent, and more than that, Amos, he's concerned. I personally believe that we should all be proud of him. I know I am. To see this young man grow up into such an elegant representative right before our eyes, he comes from us because he is us. I love him. And I think we ought to support this young man, and I'm very proud of him. That's all I got to say.
All right, let me go move on to James at 239-1310.
Thank you, Elder Rush. Love you, too.
Hi, James.
Hi, Congressman. How you doing, sir?
How you doing, sir?
Good, good. Sir, there was a previous caller that was saying a few negative things about you, and I just want to thank you very much for a lot of the work that you've done on the Armed Services Committee, especially for our veterans, and especially with those who are suffering with mental health issues. So I'm not sure what he was talking about.
Maybe are you a veteran, sir? Are you a veteran?
No, sir, I'm not, but I've got veterans in my family. So thank you very much for that. And so I know you've been doing a lot to bring back money to our district and to the state of Indiana. Could you just talk about how much money you've been able to bring back to our district?
Well, as I said at the beginning of the show, sir, we brought over $500 million back to the district. And what we've been doing, I talk about the two pieces of legislation that the president signed into law. One of those pieces of legislation deals specifically with the mental health issues that occur with our service members that often go untreated. And now, because of this legislation, the Department of Defense is taking a holistic approach at addressing these issues, and someone seeking advancement within the military will not be penalized because they've sought treatment. So I think it's a revolutionary advancement, and hopefully more people are paying attention like yourself. We appreciate you. But if I may mention Elder Rush, who called in. I have a deep deal of affection toward Elder Rush. Amos, we're living in a time where folks don't have the Amos Brown spirit. They don't have the Julia Carson spirit, the Bill Crawford spirit, the Joe Summers spirit, the Billy Bro spirit, Tony Duncan. They don't, Andy Jacobs, they don't have that spirit or mentorship. And what I love about Elder Rush is that if he has an issue with you, he'll sit down with you and talk to you about it. He's willing to invest in younger people. I'm seeing now, Dr. Brown, we live in a space where I hear young people say, well, it's time for the older people to sit down and let us take over. Mm-hmm. The question becomes, where in the world are you taking us?
Yeah.
But to the older generation, they can't be so stuck in their ways where if they see a younger brother, sister coming up in the ranks that they can't sabotage them all out of the name of love when it's really deep levels of insecurity and they're trying to break down this person so they don't usurp them. So, Elder Rush is a rare spirit. I just want to say I love him.
Writings, 239-1310, or send an email to praiseindy.com or a text message at 37890, keyword Amos, on the text message. Amos, while I support Carson, I would ask him to look more closely at his staff. There seems to be a disconnect. Some of the staff give off impression they are too busy to return calls, emails, etc. It's frustrating when I know this is not your intention. And he was good writing his text with all the little text abbreviations there. Congressman, your response.
Well, that's good to know. I think we have a phenomenal staff. They're very hardworking. They're smart. They come from Ivy League to Ivy Tech to Tech High School. And they do a phenomenal job. That is not to say that, occasionally mistakes aren't made, but if he would be more specific, I appreciate his support, but if he would be more specific and provide us with a name, we could deal with the issue.
If, when somebody calls your staff, are the staff members instructed to give their names? Or is it,
absolutely.
Call Congressman Andre Carson, you're talking to Amos.
We have a login system where a person is required to give their name and log in the time in which the call was received. That comes from my police background. We want to streamline our constituent services.
You want to know who's calling.
Absolutely. So when a person says, I called your office and no one called me back, I'll say, well, who called you? And now, we've had those issues where there have been gaps, but for the most part, we don't get those complaints. But I did learn from my grandmother too. She said, well, Negroes lie all the time talking about they called my office. They hadn't called anybody. You know, she was like that, but people occasionally call. And if it's an intern, because we do hire a lot of interns, who are in training, we want to correct it. But for the most part, our staffers are impeccable. But if there's a name, we could deal with the issue immediately.
239-1310. 239-1310's afternoon's name is back to the phones. And Simone, finally a lady gets through. Hi there.
Hello, Mr. Carson.
Hello, ma'am.
While you're on the subject of your staff, just wanted to say thanks for the help that they've given me. I found your staff to be very responsive.
So, well, thank you.
Thank you to you and to your staff.
Thank you.
And I just wanted to call because I read something I thought was kind of silly in the Indy Star today about your support for Amtrak funding.
Okay.
And I guess this is more of a comment than a question, but...
Okay.
Correct me if I'm wrong, Amtrak employs over 800 people here in the Indianapolis Beech Grove area, and
right.
I think, of course, our congressman is going to support Amtrak and their funding.
Are you an Amtrak employee, ma'am? May I ask?
I'm not,
okay.
But I know people who are, and
okay.
I think it's commendable how much you support them, and I see on your Facebook page when you... out in the public talking about Amtrak, and you recently ride on an Amtrak train, and
yep.
I just think it's a wonderful thing to see our congressman supporting our such a local employer, such an asset to our community.
Congressman, on Amtrak, does Amtrak realize how much competition the bus gives that train between here and Chicago and that they really, to compete, are going to have to upgrade that line? Or is there something Congress can say to change the law that says a passenger train has to stop for a freight train instead of the freight train stopping for the passenger train?
That is a large debate. Of course, we're not on the East Coast, nor are we on the West Coast, so we don't have the plethora of concerns that they have. However, I think when you have the megabuses of the world who can go to Chicago at, what, $50 and come back round trip, offers a deep level of competition, and the train may take 6 or 7 hours to get to Chicago, I think those are questions that have to be answered. We do have the largest maintenance facility in the country. We build trains for the Acela. We build some of the luxury cabins here. I know that Governor Pence is pushing for, well, actually, there's a new private company coming in to manage that. I think Amtrak could probably look at some internal controls and streamline the process and improve some of the cars. But Amtrak provides a wonderful service. We were happy to help keep those 700 plus jobs in Indianapolis and Indiana and keep those employers there. I've been a huge supporter of Amtrak. That is not to say that they can't answer the competition call. I had a conversation with President Obama. He would like to see the line expanded from Chicago to Indianapolis to St. Louis or even to Louisville.
Let me go back to the phones and Raymond. Hi there.
Hey, good afternoon, Linus.
Good afternoon.
And Congressman.
Hello.
I have a question for you. I have been looking at and actually just saw on TV today about the 2020 celebration that's coming up for Indianapolis. And I've grown up and lived in Butler Tarkington and still do. And I won't say that the community looks to me like it, as I am in my mid-40s, looks like it's dying, but it looks like it's full of Band-Aids.
Mm-hmm.
And I look at Gary, and I look at Detroit, and I'm really concerned because many times when I get off at night, I used to not be worried about that. And they're adding police and things to the police department, and I just don't feel the confidence that I had before. When I would, when I would come into the house or just things in our community, because in 2020, it's going to look a lot different than it does today because of technology and the way people are doing things on the computers and not so much on the streets. And I see a lot of panhandling, just general inner city community things. Have you ever thought of or do you know what you're doing for that program for us in the community for the 2020? And or do you have like some kind of centralized quote unquote gatekeeper or community overseer? Because I know you're dealing with a lot of federal things as well as local that could make sure that our inner city doesn't die out. Does that make sense?
I think Congressman, what Raymond is talking about is some process that the city is doing that's kind of not centralized, not fully focused, and not fully explained, and it's revolving around the bicentennial of the founding of the city in 1820, and I think there is a lot of disconnect as to what really that is. And is your office plugged into that?
Not necessarily. We do a lot of work and advocacy for more younger people to be involved in STEM, or even STEAM, science, technology, engineering.
But I think this is more, where does the city go? What will the city do, and commemorate in 2020 where it will be? And it really is kind of, and it sounds like, from Raymond's question, that this is really more an issue that needs to be laid at the city as to why they have, because they really have not adequately come to the community to explain what that 2020 thing is.
Yeah.
And see, before somebody gets smart and asks the congressman to support a federal grant to help support Project 2020, somebody needs to come and explain that. But you made some good points. Let me go to Anonymous, then we'll take a break at 239-1310. Hi there.
Hello.
Hi. How are you?
Hey. Hello, everyone. I'm kind of upset, and I'm trying to stay cool about it, but I have a question and a comment.
Okay.
My first question is, I hear a lot of people say that there's jobs out here, but yet and still I've been looking for a job for 2 years, and I just recently have obtained a couple of part-time jobs. Most of the jobs out here, I guess my question is, where are these jobs that everyone is talking about out here? Because I'm working two jobs, and I'm in process of getting another, and they're only working us up to like 25 hours a week. So where do we get full-time jobs so that we can take care of our family?
Did you make it to our job fair a couple of months ago, sir?
I did not make it to the job fair, but I did go to the one at the fairgrounds, and I did go to the one I'm trying to calm down. Urban League. I'm sorry. And I mean, I didn't get too much of a response from that.
Let me ask you. You've been you were kind of unemployed for 2 years, correct?
Yes.
What'd you do before?
Before I was like a material tech.
A material tech.
Right.
What does that
do? I work with a scientist, but I got downsized, and I try to find work in that field. But because I didn't have the credentials, I have not been successful, but I have made attempts to find jobs in other areas. And like now, the part-time jobs that I have, they're minimum wage jobs.
And the credential you need, is that a college degree? Is that
a college degree, a bachelor's degree.
In what kind of field? I'm not trying to be smart. I'm just trying to learn about the particular job.
Liberal arts with a chemistry, basically.
Ooh.
And the certificate has to be a 4-year degree?
Has to be a 4-year degree.
But you had the job, but you were doing that without a 4-year degree.
I started out as a temporary, and I went from temporary to contract, and from contract to permanent. Then I got downsized, and I've been looking for work since then, and everyone's pretty much telling me that I need to have at least a bachelor's degree.
It sounds like you got the experience, and then somebody changed the rules of the game. And I think, Congressman, this is the kind of disconnect that somebody gets their door, get their foot in the door, they got the experience, then they lose the job, they try to get in, and then they get hit. Well, we don't care about the experience. You need the degree, when probably he knows more from the experience than the degree.
Yeah, that's one of the challenges. I know that most of my congressional colleagues don't hold job fairs, but it's a personal passion of mine that I had the organization attempt just to remedy some of the concerns that he has. I know that at our job fair, we had many folks in the science and technology space. We had folks from the biomedical space, the very industry that he's interested in. We also had employees from UPS, FedEx, and healthcare there. Is there a reason, sir, why you didn't make our job fair?
When I found out about it, it was pretty much too late. But the thing that I have a problem with, I've also been working with Work One.
I was getting ready to go there.
In Indiana Career Connect, you know, they want you to go on and they want you to sign up for all these different things. And even through Indiana Career Connect, they have jobs on there that have been on there since April of this year. Mm-hmm. I have not gotten any kind of response from them. I've went in, I've redone my resume, I've went over there and I've allowed them to help me update my resume or change it. And I'm still not getting any bites. I've been signed up for Career Builders and Monster. I have not gotten really any kind of bites. And like I said, the only work that I have been able to find is part-time work. And everywhere that I go, they're only hiring up to 25 or 26 hours. And I mean, I believe I know why, but the thing of it is I mean, I can't support my family off of that. And then to work all these different jobs, it's taken away from me even being able to be with my family, and I still can't support.
Maybe this is something, Congressman, where he could make an appointment to come in and sit down with one of your folks, bring in his resume.
Absolutely.
So that you and your staff can see, here's somebody with this kind of experience and credentials that can't get a job. In order to get the credentials, he would have to go into debt, $40,000 to $50,000, to go to a 4-year degree. That doesn't make any sense to me.
No, I agree. If can we get your information offline? And in fact, this is what I want you to do. I want you to call 283-6516.
Hold on. All right, you got your pen?
Yeah, I wouldn't expect to get a number. Okay.
All right.
I'm ready.
283-6516. And I want you to ask for Andrea Scott. Andrea Scott.
And something tells me she's listening to the radio now and is expecting to hear the phone ring in about a minute and a half.
Okay. Well, actually, I'm on break off my part-time job, but I will give her a call. You said it's
283-6516.
In fact, what you do before you get in trouble on the break, when you hang up from me, call that number, ask for Andrea Scott, and then set up a quick appointment where you can call her back at a little longer time, okay?
Okay.
I want you to be on it. I want you so that when the congressman hears about it,
right,
Andrea Scott say, I heard from that anonymous real quick.
That's right.
Okay?
Okay.
All
thank
right, good
sir.
Luck to you.
All right, thank you.
Good luck.
All right, 239-1310, 239-1310 is after news. Mm-hmm. We'll take a break. We'll be back after these.
This is Reverend Jesse Jackson, and you're listening to Afternoons with Amos on AM 1310, The Light, in the source of inspiration and praise.
Why do I get the feeling everybody's warming up for next year's election? Just got a note from the Department of Public Works, the Indy Snow Force. It's actually going to activate a partial crew of drivers beginning at 11 o'clock tonight to monitor city streets for slick spots. Drivers will apply salt if needed to ensure Indy streets are safe for driving, even though no more than a trace of snow or sleet is expected. And if there's accumulation, it would be limited to grassy areas. Must be because there's an election next year, but let's deal with the election this year. 239-1310, 239-1310 with Congressman Andre Carson. Back to the phones. And Miriam, hi there.
Hi, Amos. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Mr. Carson.
Hello. Hello.
Hi. Some of my family members are small business owners, and I know with our economy still recovering, I think that small businesses play an important role in that, and I'm just wondering what you're doing to support small businesses in Washington.
Well, as I said a few minutes ago, we have done a lot in terms of bringing small businesses into the federal space, and we just had a small business forum earlier this year. I sit on the Transportation and Infrastructure Committee, and I'm the ranking member over the Economic Development Committee. So we had a small business forum earlier this year dealing specifically with how can we not only empower small businesses, women-owned businesses, veterans-owned businesses, minority-owned businesses, but bring them into the federal space, provide them with the proper mentorship, and make them primary contractors.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I really appreciate your work.
Thank you, ma'am.
All right, let me go back to the phones in Anonymous. Hi there.
Hello.
Hi.
Am I on?
You are most certainly on. How are you?
Okay.
You're on the air. What's up?
Okay. Yes, I have a question. It's a legal question. July of this year, new law came out taking the veto power away from the prosecutor in reference to inmates attempting to get sentence modifications, which is a good thing. My question is this law retroactive?
That is a state law, and we're here with a United States congressman who deals with federal laws.
Okay. Okay. Who would I ask?
Have you talked to your state representative? What side of town do you live on?
Southwest.
You said Southwest?
Northwest.
Northwest? You in Pike Township?
Yes.
You would get a hold of State Representative Cherish Pryor.
Wonderful.
And if you call 232-9600, that's the State House of Representatives, they can give you contact information for.
All right. Well, thank you very much.
All right. Thank you. What's your feel, Congressman, on this election? Everybody, forget North Carolina, all these other places around. We talking about here.
Yeah. Well, we've been hitting up a lot of beauty shops, barber shops. We've been going to community centers. We've been on the South Side, North Side, West Side, East Side. And there are degrees of indifference.
Mm-hmm.
Some people didn't even know that an election was forthcoming on Tuesday. But when we connected with people, we found that a lot of people were happy about voting for those folks who they feel represent them, i.e. Carson, i.e. other folks, Myla, whoever it is. But at the same time, I think people were still frustrated with folks like the Tea Party.
Okay.
And so my appeal is that we cannot sleep because the midterm elections are just as critical, if not even more important than the presidential race.
Have people gotten the lesson of Ferguson? If you don't vote in your local election, don't complain when stuff goes against you.
I think Ferguson should be a lesson because if we don't move now, we could see some similar activities in Indianapolis, which we don't want. So vote.
Now you gave out the office number, which is the regulated federal office.
Absolutely.
That belongs to the people of the 7th Congressional
That's
District.
Right.
But if people want more information about your campaign, Andre Carson, for Congress, how do they get a hold of you?
226-9400, or Carson for Congress.
And if you missed any of the interview, it will be on our website in a couple of hours with all of the other campaign interviews that we have had in the fall section. Andre Carson running for re-election, the Democratic candidate in House District 7, Congressional District 7. Always good to see you. Thanks
you
very,
too,
very
Dr.
much.
Brown.